Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
This is Diana Pascal, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. So, in preparing for this episode, I thought about, there was a conversation I had with sort of a mentor, spiritual guide of mine a number of years ago. And we were having lunch one day, and he was talking about his path to spiritual growth and how his life changed. And he's just a super loving dude. His name's Jimmy Hayward, just one of the best people you could ever possibly meet. And he's the kind of guy that if you know him, you want to be part of his life. You know, you want to be in his world. And he was talking about how when we grow spiritually and we become more connected to ourselves, we radiate love. We attract people. People become drawn to us. And, you know, I'd like to think that I'm heading that direction. I don't know, but it's definitely something that I see in the guest for this episode. Her name's Diana Pascal. She's a yogi and a coach and a searcher, you know, just someone who's on a search for her highest self and deepest connection. And I found her on Instagram, and she posts a lot of really cool stuff, and I just, you know, was drawn to her, and, you know, just reading some of the stuff she wrote and some of the different things she posted, I knew I wanted to have her be a guest on the show. And I checked out one of her classes a while back when this whole COVID thing got started. She lives and works in LA, so, and it was, you know, it was a great class. She's good at what she does and just has this really powerful sort of presence. So I was excited to get her on the show, and finally here we are. We had a great conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. Diana Pascal.
Just the product of some bad seeds.
Diana, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I've been excited about having you come on. And, you know, I've talked about on this show a number of different times that Instagram is just like a gold mine for guests, at least for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, somehow, you know, you're a yogi. And I practice yoga too. So I think that's probably how I stumbled on your profile. And then I started following you. And then, you know, I find this person who is like so brave and unapologetically herself and free. I mean, I know Instagram is not necessarily reality, but that's what comes across.
Oh, thanks. I guess.
No, I mean, no. Yeah. I mean, like
I like that energy.
I just, that's what I pick up from you. And like, you're really you. And, you know, if I was a young woman and I saw you, I would like chase you down. How can I emulate you? I would want you to mentor me. So wow. I just feel like the reason I wanted to do this podcast is so I can help people be like you or how you seem to me.
Mm.
So thank you. Thank you for coming.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Kind introduction.
You're welcome.
Yeah. The Instagram gods connected us. So I'm happy they did.
So, you teach yoga. You live in LA, right?
I do. I've been in LA for about a year and a half. And before that, I was in New York City for over a decade.
Yeah. Do you miss it?
So, you know, I love being able to bike around and get places like that and just the kind of tight knit feeling of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always something happening. But I was seeking, you know, better weather. I was seeking a different lifestyle. And I felt like LA was a good opportunity for, you know, the wellness conscious world community. Yeah. So I thought I would give it a shot. So I'm still here.
Yeah. So now I think you told me you're from Tennessee, right?
Yep. Grew up in Tennessee. Spent, you know, all my childhood there and went to college there as well. And then after spending a little bit of time overseas, I just kind of decided to go up to New York. I come from a very humble upbringing. My family's really, for many generations, has been in a small town in Tennessee. And I just sort of got a taste of the big city life when I went to Europe and decided I wanted to live in a big city. So I went to New York without literally knowing a soul.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So,
yeah.
Now that's brave.
It is brave. Yeah. I think that there's some aspect of me that has that ability to just step into things,
mm-hmm.
which is, I guess, what's gotten me here so far in life.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was that like, leaving a family that lived in the same place for many generations to go to a big city?
Well, at the time, I remember being pretty excited. You know, when I went to Europe, I got this job that was just sort of just like a desk job to make some money. And it was at a recruitment company. And I never wanted to be a recruiter. But when I flew to New York, I had studied journalism. I also minored in psychology. But when I flew to New York, I was like, just going to interview for some jobs and just hopefully I'll get a job. And I interviewed at some PR agencies, didn't get an offer, but I got an offer at a recruitment company. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to take this job. And I was just excited for, something completely different and just the unknown and being in kind of a diverse, multicultural place. And then I ended up working in PR actually pretty quickly after. And, did a number of career changes over the years before I dove more deeply into yoga. I was an actor for a bit. I worked in digital marketing and they were all great opportunities. And along the way, I had a number of hiccups and relationships, a number of just inner turmoil moments that happened to me. And that got me into, you know, showing up at the Buddha Center, in Manhattan, starting to meditate, starting to read, a couple of books like by Pema Chodron and, Wherever You Go, There You Are, I think was one of the first sort of spiritual books outside of Christianity, which I grew up, studying and knowing, Yeah, and that kind of led me into the asana practice, the physical practice of yoga, and then I did my first training, and then it kind of snowballed from there, and I just started teaching pretty quickly after. But my background growing up was really in movement. I did gymnastics, and I was a competitive cheerleader. I did that in college. And so movement was really a medicine to me and for me. And I think I didn't really put it together until I discovered yoga and found that the power of being in a moving meditation is really healthy and healing for the mind to have something to drop into, which is the body and the breath and the present moment. And I think in those states, you know, it allowed my, I had some trauma growing up. It allowed, you know, for that to soften, for me to start to heal parts of that. And then of course I got into therapy and a whole host of healing modalities, which we can jump more into. But yeah, that's kind of my story. Yeah. High level story of what got me to New York. Yeah.
So would you call yourself a Buddhist?
I believe that there's a lot of incredible teachings from Buddhism, in that the main kind of teaching that I take away that I use with me on a regular basis as I'm, you know, interacting with my life and in my meditation practice is that I only really have control over my response, and I have to let go of the attachment to outcomes in my life and the need to control in such a forceful way. And that was a big lesson because, you know, I believe from the difficulties I had as a child and the traumas I went through as a child, which I can speak more about, really led me to believe, you know, I remember at a young age feeling like I'm not going to end up, you know, in this unhealthy relationship. Like I'm going to find a perfect partner and I'm going to have, you know, material wealth and success. And I'm going to be this big marketing executive and whatever it was. Like I started to create these visions of my life that were so strong. And then when things went awry, you know, I didn't have something else to tether myself to. So I didn't have a deeper level of what I would say that I've discovered in my meditation practice is a deeper level of peace and acceptance for allowing things to unfold and not trying to force things. And I also believe that that gives opportunity for what I would call, you know, divine intervention or intuition, and things to come in that if you're so rigid and forceful on what you think you know for yourself, you might not see those things. You know, if I had decided I'm going to be a marketing executive, I'd probably be really unhappy right now, doing some marketing director role. And I wouldn't have allowed myself to even consider that I could teach yoga for a living, you know, which I've been doing now for 5 years. So yeah, that's one of the most powerful Buddhist teachings. And I'd say the one caveat to Buddhism is kind of the other end of having some desires and letting the desires be in my heart and letting them, you know, channeling those desires to a healthy amount of you know, vigor and focus and action. So while, you know, I think it's perfectly, I think that whatever people choose to do with their life, and we can get into more of that with authenticity, I think that what you choose to do with your life is ultimately a choice, and it can be a very conscious choice. And I think that's the one thing that I would offer to people is that you really can choose what you want to do with your life. And you know, there are people that choose to go into long periods of monastery and contemplation and you know, meditation and, you know, whatever kind of studies or, you know,
or living in the mountains or.
Yeah. Like you can choose that lifestyle. I don't think that there's anything, you know, inherently wrong with that. And I thought about it many days. But I also think that if you feel called to make an impact in the world, in your own life, in your family, in your community, or in your country or in the world, and you feel like you're called to do that, then you can let that desire, you know, feel your heart and give you that fire that you need to take action. But to relinquish control over what might come of it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think with some Buddhist interpretations, there might be of like a complete detachment or desirelessness.
Right.
You know, just allowing yourself to be unattached completely. And, you know, we are here in the physical form, you know, having a human experience. So I say dive into it, you know, yeah. Be human.
Well, and you know, I've met people who, that detachment thing is kind of, their excuse to not explore intimacy because of their fear, you know? And it just, anything that we go too far with either way, right, is mm-hmm. going to be problematic.
Yeah. I agree. You know, I think that anything, you know, can become addictive, can become an attachment, can become a crutch. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it is even a yoga practice, you know, yeah. Becoming obsessive with a perfect yoga practice can lead to injury, could lead to obsessive mm-hmm. compulsiveness with that, could lead to, you know, in a relationship, obviously having a partner and having healthy relationships and people that you connect with and you're vulnerable with and you're intimate with can provide so much healing and so much growth.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of trust and a lot of vulnerability. And yeah, I think that's a dance in knowing when to be vulnerable and when you can open up and
yeah.
when you're too attached. And yeah, that's
well, and I think yeah. of all these things like addiction where we get off track in life. The way I've come to look at these things is as distractions from our emotional experience because we don't want to feel fear or we don't want to feel sadness or whatever it is we're avoiding. You know, we throw ourselves into something obsessively to try to take the place of that unconsciously, of course. You know, I mean, I had a problem with drinking. I didn't drink because I wanted to have a drinking problem. You know, I drank because I didn't want to feel what I was feeling. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to feel what I was feeling because it hurt. And it hurt because I didn't know how to manage my emotions. And you know, we're not taught that very well in our culture at all. So that's a lot of what I'm about too is, you know, we have to do something about that with, especially with men, I think, you know, so we need to cultivate relationships with our emotional experiences.
Totally. Yeah. You know, I think, yeah, you're right. Women get a little bit more leverage or, you know, space. Well, there's a
broader
emotional.
Range of emotions that are acceptable for women to display, you know, and with men there, you know, it's like anger, you know, is a acceptable emotion, you know, shouldn't do it too much, but, and happiness. And that's about it, you know?
Like, right.
Like I grew up with very clear, unspoken messages that if you are sad, you will be devoured. Like you do not want to be sad. And mm-hmm. so then, you know, I go through life pretending I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And not even realizing that I started doing that as a little kid. And, you know, well into adulthood, I was still doing it.
Yeah, I can totally relate. You know, I was living in New York City, which is obviously a high stress, you know, type A kind of place to be. And, you know, I think I probably 5 years ago left my marketing career to teach yoga. And at some point in that process started to see that this was not long-term, the place I wanted to be in, primarily because I didn't want to have to be on all the time. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I think you can live in a high stress place and still learn how to make space for yourself when mm-hmm. you need space and when you need to be emotional and you need to withdraw or whatever you need. But that takes like a really, you know, I'm just speaking for myself, like it took me many years to really know myself enough and to be strong enough and to have enough boundaries.
Yeah.
And just personal awareness to know, like, I don't need to go to that party tonight, or I don't need to say yes to this, you know, work project, and I need to take a weekend and just be by myself and meditate and like go to the park and like, you know, write and whatever it is and like let things move through me and give myself space. And I think so many, and I was living in New York for 10 years, and I just think many people and people around me, they tend to do the opposite, which is like drink, like you're saying, go out, say yes to all the things, and just push through, you know, being exhausted, being burnt out at work, you know, and just feeling like, for me anyway, I felt like if I say no to someone, they're not going to love me. They're not going to accept me. I'm not going to be relevant anymore. And that goes back, I think, to my childhood, you know, of just needing acceptance and needing to people please, which is something I think I learned, you know, probably very, very young. And so many of us, I think, that are trying to be successful or trying to, you know, heal different wounds from their childhood or trying to find acceptance.
Yeah.
And then that goes into authenticity. Like if you're not authentic with like, hey, I need to take time for myself, then you're not even giving your relationships an opportunity to connect in a more real space.
Because you're not being who you are.
Exactly.
You know, if you're not saying what you need, if you're not saying what you want, then you're not showing up.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's like a little bit of both, I think it's a little bit of, there's a part of us that's afraid to be completely authentic and vulnerable, because if we share, like, let's say early in a relationship, share that we're afraid of being vulnerable or share something from our past that's like hard to share, that could be what's blocking us. And I think on some other level, I think for me anyways, before I was really meditating, like I didn't even have access to parts of myself. You know, I wasn't even, fully myself ultimately. Like I was, you know, I was living through other people, through other people's eyes, and showing up for what they needed, and in a lot of codependent, unhealthy relationship patterns.
Yeah.
And until I gave myself many years of being single and healing, you know, I don't think I really got to be the person that you're seeing on Instagram now, where you're like seeing someone who feels more free and more authentic, because I wasn't really being myself.
Yeah.
So,
and it does take time. And, you know, I mean, I'm like now at this point in my life, just lately, I've really had these thoughts of, man, like this, I feel like me, you know, like there's just this connection to myself that's deepening and feeling more real. And it, you know, it's because, I mean, this podcast for me was a practice in authenticity, you know, and it came out of, you know, a contract that finished and deciding I'm not going to go get another job. I'm not going to take another job and again, put off what it is I actually want to do. I'm not selling myself out again. If I don't do it now, when am I ever going to do it? And so I didn't get a job, and I, you know, I started writing more and eventually, started putting this together. It was already an idea, but I didn't know what it was going to be called or what I was going to do with it. So, you know, it became what it is. And, you know, it's funny. I've talked about, you know, if you have a podcast about authenticity, like you kind of gotta be real. I mean, I can't fake it, you know? So if I'm recording an intro or something, it's like, ah, that doesn't sound like me, you know, sometimes, and I'll do it again, you know? And, yeah, it's, but I think, you know, going back to what we do with our lives work wise, I feel like we just kind of unconsciously in our culture do what we're kind of indoctrinated to believe that we're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I think we do it with jobs. We do it with relationships. We do it social in every part of our lives. And
So for me, that's interesting. You know, I've processed this a lot about like why, because I worked in fashion, my first PR job, and then I was pursuing acting, and I had a marketing director position at a tech company, and which was not really authentic to what I wanted to be doing with my life. And then by way of yoga over time of practicing, because I was practicing when I was acting, got really more into it towards the end of that. And then did my training when I had the marketing director job and got, again, I was meditating on a regular basis and reading more spiritual texts and just had a couple of moments of clarity, you know, on I'm really supposed to be helping people heal. Like that's what I'm here to be doing. And then it just became a process of just like, what does that look like? And what are my unique gifts that I've been given from my life so that it's unique for me? You know, because, you know, I think I mentioned to you before, like, I minored in psychology in undergrad and had thought about pretty quickly studying psychology, but there was some part of me. So just to give you some info on my background, I grew up with a very, very unstable, family dynamics. My mother had me when she was 17. My father was 21. My father had, you know, a tendency to alcoholism, and my mother was quite volatile with her emotions and quite codependent with me. And we moved a lot. My mom got married a couple of times, and there was a lot of volatility. Some of the people she spent time with were very unhealthy. There was a good amount of violence around me at times. And I just sort of could not trust my environment. So again, I developed this like need to be in control. And I was like hyper aware and hyper vigilant about controlling my environment. And so, you know, you can develop something which is like empathic ability where you sort of like your energy field, which is normally within your own body, moves out of your body and you start to be paying attention to the energy fields of people around you. And you learn that as a coping mechanism of like, well, if I know what they're doing, then I can respond you know, to them and prevent, you know, any harm. Like, I'm just like on alert. And so I think like when I went to Europe, I became a different person at the age of, you know, I guess I was 21, 22. It was like the Diana from the South who has this trauma and had these like unhealthy boyfriends in college and was like drinking all the time and, you know, just was just like a mess. but somehow like, you know, I got straight A's, I got a scholarship, I got through university, you know, cum laude. I did that, but I also was like, had very unhealthy coping mechanisms. And I started to become a little bit aware of that when I went to Europe. And some part of me though wanted to have fun, wanted to feel free and didn't want to think about psychology. And so I was like, I'm not going to go to grad school and study therapy. I don't want to have to be around darkness, quote, you know? And so I think I went the opposite direction and I went into like the most frivolous and the most, you know, like just
kind of surface level,
superficial, like beautification and that kind of world. And so I worked in fashion and then I got into acting because I thought like, I wanna portray something exciting, something beautiful, something novel and interesting. And I think through that, you know, I started to learn that I still had things to work out, that like the light comes with the dark. And I learned that the hard way, you know, by struggling and by being in an unhealthy relationship. And I think also by not really knowing myself, as I was speaking to earlier, like I was so busy running around trying to fit in this lifestyle of, the cool, like hip New York City fashionista or, you know, actress, that I wasn't getting to really work through the stuff from my childhood. And of course, if you don't work through, as you know, from your experience as well, right? Like if you don't look at these aspects of yourself, they're just going to stay there and kind of rear their head in different ways. And so, yeah, it brought me to my knees many times. And then I got into yoga and it really helped me work through these things. So yeah, I don't know how I got into that story, but
I don't either, but
I think the point was that, you know, you were talking about being authentic, and I think ultimately it's a daily practice.
Yeah.
It's not something that you just have. And I also think that my understanding of reality now and myself now is that, you know, I don't even think of myself as like a person, so to speak, but more as an energy that's moving with time, in time and space, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And in realizing that there is a part of me that is still has the memory of, you know, and all the experiences of my childhood and of the things I went through that are coming forth in real time and constantly are being, you know, reflected.
Yeah.
And so it's just through everyday awareness that those shifts can happen. It is an ongoing process, healing and growing and becoming more authentic and getting to know, I believe, more of like our true selves, which is who we are underneath our traumas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, back to this indoctrination stuff, like, just, you know, everything we're talking about is, you know, we're talking about, reflection, like actually paying attention and evaluating our lives and being really conscious. And I think, you know, the busyness, all the stimuli in a environment like New York City, or it doesn't even have to be that. It can be in a smaller place, but you just have all kinds of stuff going on, drama, whatever, you know, but,
totally.
It's like, it keeps us from being who we are. And one of the things that kind of hit me like in this COVID-19 thing is we're kind of forced to slow down. And like, I already worked from home most of the time, and I already had some semblance of a spiritual practice and was already trying to be authentic. But, you know, I feel like it was an opportunity, or it is still an opportunity, for all of us to look at how we're actually living our lives and if this is actually the way we want to do it. Because a big part of growth for me in the last 10 years has been just asking myself, is this really how I want to be spending my time? And how do I get closer to being able to spend all my time the way I want to be spending my time and moving in that direction?
Yeah, that's
most of us don't even like try. We just punch a clock, you know, and make the money and have the kids and all that stuff, and aren't even really thinking about what we want, which is a shame, because what I really believe is that the things that we want are, you know, those are given to us. You know, those are God-given, or however you want to frame it for yourself, but that's how I explain it, God-given. And because of that, those are the gifts that are we're going to be able to give to the world. And so when, you know, we're doing the things that we've been gifted with, then it's easy and the abundance comes. But, you know, if we're stuck in, I have to work 40 hours a week, because if I don't, I won't make enough money to pay my bills. And, you know, not that we don't all have those concerns, but it's,
of course,
it's looking at things through a lens of scarcity and limitation rather than abundance and possibilities.
I totally agree. And I also think, you know, you can always do things in steps, you know, mm-hmm. and that's kind of, I work as a coach as well. And that's kind of the way I work with clients, is you can't really know, like what you just said, how do you want to be spending your time? Well, you're not going to know how you want to be spending your time if you don't move towards what you think you might want to be doing and get feedback. Mm-hmm. Life is all about feedback, right? So it's same as in relationship. You can't really know if you want to be in relationship with someone or be friends with someone without going out and hanging out with them and getting a coffee or whatever it is, or getting on the phone. Like, you can't really know what is going to take place in life without taking a step forward. So it's like, you know, for you, you thought maybe you want to do a podcast, right? And so you took those first action steps, reached out to your people you thought about doing the first interviews with and whatever. And so for me, I did my first yoga training. I taught my first class. I got great feedback. It felt good. I was nervous and I was scared, but ultimately it felt so great. And I was learning. It was a process. You know, I started getting private clients. I started coaching people. I was being coached, you know, it was a process. And I think it's all about the steps. And you can also have things that you know you need to feel safe and to feel secure. And whether that is a 9-to-5 or second job or whatever it is you need to do to pay your rent, if you need to move back in with your parents, if you need to take out a loan, you know, whatever those things are, if it's a career shift, then, you know, then you can set yourself up so that you know you you're not alone and you're doing it with, like some amount of stability. And it's like a step by step. You take the first couple steps and you write down, you know, how is this feeling? Like how, like what's the feedback I'm getting? Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't feel good, then, you know, what would make it feel better? What else are you curious about? Mm-hmm. And I also think like this kind of conversation that you and I are having can be intimidating for maybe people that have never even questioned leaving whatever it is they're doing, but they're waking up feeling unhappy. Right. And I have no doubt that there are people out there right now that are feeling some amount of discomfort in their lives, whether it's something in their dynamics with their family or their home or their relationships or with their career and their work. And that can be a real struggle in wanting to shift something and not knowing, you know, not knowing what to do. Mm-hmm. So what I would recommend is for me, meditate and journal is like something I have to do on a daily basis, to be more authentic, to learn more about myself, to get feedback and to take space from the noise of the world around me and really listen to myself. Mm. So that's my practice. Meditate. And I do something called, I don't know if you've read The Artist's Way or heard of The Artist's Way.
Yeah, you do morning pages.
Yeah, I do morning pages. I mean, honestly started doing that back when I was trying to be an actress in New York City, and of course gave up on it many times and have been very inconsistent, but I tend to do it pretty regularly once a day where I just free write anything that comes up. And then if there's something that comes up in there that's like really relevant, I might, you know, write it somewhere else or put it in to-do list or write it somewhere more relevant. But I don't even necessarily reflect back to my morning pages. Mm-hmm. I just write and let things get released, but I will have epiphanies come from that, you know?
Oh yeah. Well, one of the things I love about writing is you end up places where you wouldn't, if you didn't write it down. You know, it's you're looking at things from different angles and suddenly you draw some conclusion or get an idea or whatever that it just wouldn't have happened otherwise.
Totally.
And I feel, you know, more grounded when I write, and especially if I do it in the morning. And that's one of the reasons why I feel more like myself, is because I've gotten into a really solid practice every morning writing after, you know, losing that for a while and, or drifting away from it and, struggling to get it back. And now it feels really good and it feels right and stuff will come up and I'll use some of it other places. And like one thing that came up, I was going to mention a post I did over the weekend. I did this meme that says you're not supposed to hate your job, and wrote a little bit of copy about it, which, you know, basically, is, you know, people who call you an idealist are usually people who've already given up on life. Mm. And also that part of you that has trouble getting out of bed in the morning, that's your spirit telling you you're in the wrong place. You're doing the wrong thing or something.
Yeah.
You need to change something.
Well, you know, and I can speak to this very, very well. So much. You know, I think, well, for me personally, feeling stable was such a primary need from my background and my childhood. Mm-hmm. And feeling like I'm safe, I'm stable, I have money in the bank. I need those like really basic things to feel really good to do the other things. And I think that everyone has a different need from that. One of my coaches who studied with Tony Robbins was talking about this, and that like we all need two things in life. I think this is brilliant. We all need certainty and we all need uncertainty. We need both. And like, if there's no uncertainty or excitement, so to speak, in your life, then it's going to get a little dull and boring and repetitive. And the uncertainty to pursue is what you're saying, Tom, like this is what my heart is calling me to do. Let me just try it. Let me just see what happens, you know? And shit, if I fall on my face, well,
at least I tried.
At least I tried, right? And like, really, like, for me, my experience is like, I take, you know, two steps forward, I fall, I kind of take a couple steps back, I lick my wounds, I cry, whatever, and then I get up my courage and I take, you know, five more steps, and then I fall down again. And then, you know, and it's like, and then over time, you just get used to falling and you get used to the fear of rejection or falling and stumbling and, you know, but you have to have time to recoup and to regulate and feel like, okay, I'm fine. Like the world will go on. And I think for me anyway, that's been the process of just like, you know, having support systems in place for my emotional health, making sure that, you know, other things in my life are in a good place so that I feel safe to step out and do these things that give me, like you said, to give my soul what it needs to want to wake up and be excited to take on another day. Because yeah, ultimately, if you're just living for the just
checking the boxes, whatever.
Yeah. Checking the boxes or fulfilling other people's projection of what you should be doing with your life.
Yeah.
You know, you'll wake up a little bit unhappy and,
you know, that's what happened to me, or what I did, I should say. You know, I, for whatever reason, life experience, whatever, didn't have the necessary level of self-esteem to say, I don't care if you don't think I can succeed at this, I'm going to do it anyway. I didn't have that. So when I go to the people in my life and say, you know, well, they're senior year in high school, what are you going to do? Well, all I really know I want to do is write. Well, what are you going to do? Like work at McDonald's so you can write, you know, you ought to get a trade. So, you know, I ended up down that path and joined the Carpenters Union at like 20 years old and, 19. And, you know, I love knowing what to do with my hands, being able to use tools, build shelves, whatever, know how buildings are built. I mean, I've done a little bit of everything, but I'm not a carpenter, you know, I mean, I'm not a carpenter. I mean, I am, but that's not who I am. And I was miserable. And it was the kind of thing where there was other stuff going on. Like I decided I wasn't going away to school. I kind of took this martyr thing on where I'm going to pay my way through college. And well, the next thing you know, I'm working full time. It's, you know, on a job site with angry people and abusive people. And I'm like, what did I do? And I thought I was stuck, you know, I felt stuck. Like, what am I going to do? And that's really when, before I drank and like socially too much already, but like, that's when I remember using it to change the way I felt, like really intentionally. And that's so that was like the invisible line I crossed, but that's why I was saying earlier that I really think all these places in my life where I've gotten off track, I really do think that they relate to authenticity or my failure to be authentic, because I'm not a carpenter, you know, but I chose to live like one in any way. And I wasn't in the right place. You know, I didn't belong there. And the closer I've gotten to where I belong, the better I feel. And it is a process. And, you know, you're talking about the uncertainty. I really love that, because if we're not uncertain about, like, what is there to pursue? If we're certain of everything, you know, and I think we kind of think we should be, or we want to be certain about everything. But,
yeah,
you know, one of the, you know, the guys that I work with, one of the things I've learned for myself and I try to impress upon them is that if you think about, you know, they're not knowing, okay, so that can be scary. But it can also be exciting. You can say, like, I don't know what's going to happen. And, or you can say, wow, like, I don't know what's going to happen. Anything could happen. Like, it, and that's true. You know, it depends on the point of view we take, the attitude that we bring to it. And there's something really powerful about mystery and just acknowledging.
Well, life is a mystery, right? I mean, here we are, like, there's so much that's a mystery. And I, you know, I love all the theories of what is, you know, and what our purpose is here. And, you know, you could have a 10-hour podcast on that from every different religion and philosophy. And,
well, I have my opinion about that. And
right. I mean, well, again, everyone has some opinion, some that's been passed down from their parents and their upbringing, or just what they think from their own life. And, I've dove into many different spiritual texts. For that curiosity myself of, like, what is the point? But ultimately we for sure know a couple things. You know, we know that we won't live forever in these physical forms. And we know that, you know, there's something connecting, well, I guess we don't know, but I know there's something connecting me to something outside of the physical form, you know, and I just know that to be true. So, and we know that love is just this amazing heart opening feeling that we have when we're just at peace, you know, peace, love, when we transcend all the bullshit of the modern world. And we're just, like, sitting in nature. We're just, like, watching a sunset, or we're, like, swimming out in the ocean. There's just this transcendence that happens where we're just in bliss, you know, and I have it. Yeah. I've had that after yoga, which is why I'm a yoga teacher. You know, it's like connects me to my soul, connects me to the spirit. And I don't even think my soul. I think it's, like, you know, essence, the spirit, the soul. It's like, it's like what everything is, you know, it's just the essence of consciousness, you know? So we know that that's there, and we know that we're all here, and we know that there's been years and years and years, and still to this day, lots and lots of struggle and pain and darkness.
Yeah.
And fear and people trying to control each other.
Yeah.
Because fear, there's because no control.
Fear. Yeah, because fear. And like, you know, this is, you mentioned love, and that's where, when I said, well, I know what I think. I mean, I think we're here to love. That's what I believe. And I think we could be a lot better at that, you know? And I think the fact that there's not more of that in society at large is part of the reasons why collectively we struggle, you know? And, you know, you mentioned like love, the sentiment or the feeling. And one of the things that like a dot that I connected early on in my path is that love's a verb. First of all, it's an action. You know, it's a noun too, but it serves me well to think of it as an action. Something we do.
That's powerful.
And yeah. And you know, like even you know, I think I mentioned to you that I said I was divorced. I can't remember, but going through that process of struggling in a relationship and like that was super hard and wanting to be a good man and a good dad and all that stuff. I mean, the practice that I honed in that process was, okay, what's the loving thing to do right now? How do I do this with love? And being really, really intentional about that. And understanding that, you know, it is more than just a feeling. It's about being intentional about it and doing things with love. And then later on, just probably in the last 5 years, one of the things I've just decided is, like, I've spent time in Tennessee. You're from Tennessee. People are nice in Tennessee. People are nice, you know? And I'm from Indiana. They're nice. They're not quite as nice as people in Tennessee, but they're nicer than people in Florida. And people just aren't nice to each other. The kindness, there's so much kindness missing in our lives. And, you know, like, people don't talk to each other or say hi or make eye contact or acknowledge each other. And I just decided at one point, and living in this building where I live, it's like a high-rise condo thing with a couple hundred units, and I'm in an elevator all the time. And at the time, I barely knew anybody. I just decided, you know, I'm not going to avoid making eye contact. I'm not going to not say hi because they don't say hi. I'm not, that's not who I want to be. And so, you know, I at least.
So simple, but powerful.
Just it is, because really someone. Just saying hello to someone, it really can change their day or maybe even more, you know, just such a simple act of kindness, you know? And for me, a lot of, I try to like notice when somebody needs help. And if it's reasonable for me to offer to help them, I don't look for an excuse not to. I do it, you know? And they almost always say no, but they see that, you know, someone's there, you know? I mean, you know, it can seem, if you're cynical, it might sound really, really silly, but it changed my life. Like doing those things has changed my life and the quality of life.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. It's just better, you know?
You know, like I lived in New York again for a long time, and it's one of those places too, where you can easily not know people that live across the hall from you, not know your neighbor. You know, you pass people all the time. And I definitely learned to like be friends with the barista making me a coffee. I had a dog in New York and love of my life, this dog. And you know, we went to the dog store on our walk, and I got to know the person who owned the dog store, and those little touch points and like my day, like really were beautiful and powerful. And I got to know those people over time, and, you know, And that can develop into something deeper. But if you never even give the initial like vulnerability just to be like friendly and kind and like check in with people, get to know them a little bit, then you block what could be a new relationship. And, you know, we are in this modern world, and this is something that came up when, as you were speaking, like, I think about this all the time in that, you know, we used to be more in community and in, you know, bigger family units. Like now most people don't live where their parents live. And well, I actually don't know if that's a true stat, but I'm just making it up. But I think a lot of people, you know, move away from their family, or their family is in different places. And, you know, it's not like you're living multi-generational all within proximity, you know, and a lot of people are living in bigger metropolitan cities where they don't know a lot of their neighbors. And so it's so important for us to create touch points and to create, I think, circles and communities where there's real vulnerability and real trust. And it's hard, but, you know, I think like the more you tap in and get to know yourself, the more you can be more authentic. And then you find those people and those people find you. Yeah. And you, you know, for me, it's been a lot of trust and knowing that when I let go of relationships that haven't served me or no longer serving me, there's space for new powerful relationships to come together. And yeah, and that's just something that I think is so important. And I also, like I was saying earlier, I think we're always evolving and always growing. And I think it's natural for us to embrace new friendships as we age, you know. I think that's something that I think is so important that not everyone that I see is embracing. Is like, you know, if you're a new mother or you're recently single, find people that are like you, that like you can commune with around that. It's so important in these days where, especially during COVID, where we're like so isolated, if you don't have family or connection, it's online. And I mean, hey, getting on a Zoom is better than nothing. Getting on a Zoom circle, you know, if you have to, can really serve you.
And, you know, the family thing that you talked about, I mean, I left my family, you know, like 23 years ago. I mean,
do you have kids?
I have a 14-year-old son. And and I'm the youngest of eight.
Wow, so, big family.
Yeah. So it was like, I mean, even as the years go by, I just realized more and more what a big thing it was for me to leave and how difficult it has been and what a mourning process it has been to be away. You know, at first I knew I really shouldn't or couldn't go back. And then I realized.
But you're divorced.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I left at 23 to leave Indiana to come to Florida to get sober. Really? That's what I was.
So you physically left.
I left my family of origin. You know, I lived in a town of like 50,000 people where everybody lived within like a 5-minute drive. Everybody. Yeah. And, you know, the youngest of eight, my whole family. I mean, you know, I've had a couple siblings who have lived in different towns over the years, but, and I had a sister who lived down here. She passed a few years ago, but, and then I'm here. Thank you. But, you know, that was a hard thing. That's a hard thing to miss that. And you mentioned the multi-generational thing and I, being the youngest of eight, I had one grandmother who was alive when I was born and the rest were gone. And she was not there. I mean, she was near death. And so I only remember seeing her even a couple times. And so I didn't have that. But I, you know, even as a little kid, like I had this whole circuit of little old ladies in my neighborhood that I would go help. when I was a little kid. And
so Me too, actually.
I found ways to fill that, you know, I found ways. And I've realized as an adult, one of the things, like I do a men's group and I do a lot of work around men's stuff and try to be really intentional about we need each other. Like men, we need each other. Younger men need older men. And, you know, one of the things, there's an author, Robert Bly, who wrote about men, who he talks about how we young men need the admiration from older men. And I think about, like, the last episode I did was with my high school journalism teacher. Who was, yeah, I mean, who was great. Like, I had this great experience with high school journalism, and he, like, none of it would have happened if he didn't, like, stick his neck out. And, you know, he literally grabbed my arm in the hallway one day, pulled me into his classroom, and I said, what are you doing? And he said, you're going to be a sports writer. And I was like, at the time I was like, nah, I'm going to be on the radio, because our school had a radio station and I was doing that. And what ended up happening is the tower got struck by lightning that spring. So there was no more radio station the next year. And instead of being on that staff, I went to him and I migrated to the publication staff. And it was great. You know, and there were things I went through and he was there, but you know, it was, it wasn't even like that he complimented me. I don't think it was just how he regarded me. He looked on to me like he valued me and saw potential in me and treated me that way. And you know, here I am.
Like teachers have
all
so much
these
power.
Years later, still talking about him, you know, I mean,
yeah,
it matters.
Teachers have so much power. I mean, we're very impressionable as children. And, you know, I can think of a few people who were like, I had this cheerleading coach who really saw me. And I think she noticed that I was very independent. And one day she just said, you know, I see that you're really independent and it's going to be helpful for you to learn to let people in and to let people get close to you. And maybe that's scary, but you need to start letting that happen. And I mean, I don't even know how she saw that in me, you know, but it really hit me in a way that no one had ever said anything like that. It hit me before, because I knew she was right. And I knew that I was blocking myself off from a lot of connection. That was powerful.
Well, you know, one of the things I've learned over time is, you know, the healthier I become, and, you know, I say that like I hope I'm becoming, you know, I'm not taking it for granted, but the clearer I get, the more in tune I get, we can see these things in people if we pay attention. Like
100%.
I've gotten to the point where, you know, I can look at somebody and see, like, in their face or their shoulders or what, you know, you can see if you really pay attention and you really look and just are open to it. You can see what's going on with people, or I don't know. I feel like I can. And
yeah,
usually it'll happen like with a client and I won't say anything about it. And until I see an opportunity where there's already a little trust, and I'll say, well, yeah, you like, or, you know, you're really upset about something, or, you know, and you see it in your face. A lot of times it's with, you know, people who are, they're just blocked and you see the tension in their face, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we very often can see people's egos acting out and
Yes.
Of course, we all have an ego. And this is the other thing that I think gets a little bit muffled with the with spirituality and with psychology is the fact that everyone has an ego, and it's actually very healthy. And there's a lot of people that are like, you need to get rid of your ego. And it's like, no, like your ego is what you have because you're in human body and it's helping you survive. It's helping you get food and shelter and connection. But what the way I look at it is your ego is doing all that, but your soul should be in charge of the ego. And what happens is if your ego is in charge of everything and it's a very unhealthy dynamic and patterns is developed, that's when you get into some very, very unsavory personality types or relationship dynamics.
Or just chaos, creating chaos bosses. For yourself, you know?
Yeah. And like, yeah, I think that you get to know people's egos and you can see that. I mean, I also think that sometimes when people are really unguarded and they're really dropped in, then, and you're the same, that, and there's a high level of consciousness there, that your souls can see each other. Oh, and you're man. Really just seeing the other person's soul.
You know, one of
and
the
there's
things.
A dissolving of ego, you know.
Well, one of the reasons I was drawn to you is you wrote something one time that I knew was the Course in Miracles, you know?
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's kind of, we're glancing by some of that stuff, like the ego. And when you mention it being directed by the soul, I mean, that's essentially what it's about, like being in tune with that part of us instead of the lower part of ourselves that's, you know, more destructive and, but
right. So it's like, it's going back to what you were saying earlier about like being nice to people just out and about. It's like, here's the thing is like, it's easy a lot of the times to be relatively nice. Like most, I don't know stats wise here, but let's just take like your average person who has like an average life in America. Like, you know, people are doing okay, right? You know, like we're going through obviously a very hard time right now during COVID. A lot of people are unemployed. They can't work. Maybe they're stuck at home with their children and there's some stress, of course. And luckily, hopefully they're getting unemployment. Most people, a lot of people aren't. But anyway, you know, it's like there's a certain level of comfort and you would think like when you have that certain level of comfort, it makes it easier to be nice. It makes it easier to be a supportive and compassionate person. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you have trauma and if you have other issues, then maybe not. And you know, if you're going through hardship, you know, if you're struggling, you're going through real hard times, then that makes it more challenging. Mm-hmm. And so that I really am starting to see, you know, and I really have seen that with living in New York and the things that people go through and living in that high stress environment. And, you know, so I think that we also have to look at culture when we're talking about healing and people being able to be vulnerable and be authentic and finding support, you know, like it is hard to be a kind, loving person when you're in the middle of going through stress or when you're in the middle of trauma or when you're going through, you know, lack of income or financial burdens. It's like, it's really hard. And
going back to the Buddhist stuff, you know, I mean, embracing the suffering, finding meaning in the suffering, acknowledging that we all suffer. I mean, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about the people who turn their suffering into, you know, they harden and I can't have this, so you shouldn't have it either. Or I had to fight for this, so why should you get it more easily or whatever, you know? And it's an absence of compassion that results from like hardening, you know?
Yeah, the Course in Miracles talks about, you know, any decision that you, any action or reaction or decision is like, are you choosing to do something in love and for love, or are you doing something because of fear? And so, yeah, like an unhealthy ego that's doing something based on fear is like, you know, trying to protect what's mine and trying to control and doesn't want someone else to have more than them, like you're saying.
And we're separating ourselves from everyone else, which is, you know,
of course,
not what is great. But the other part about the course that really I thought about this as I was listening to you. The first time I went to a class, man, that higher consciousness thing, I mean, just that particular room, and most of the time when I've gone, I just feel like a different frequency.
Well, that's real. And that, I'm so glad you brought that up, because, you know, I think I mentioned earlier, like when I went to Europe, I felt different. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something powerful for everyone to know, is that changing your environment is one of the most powerful things you can do to shift things in your life. Like for you specifically, you said, I had to leave and go to Florida and do this.
Right.
Like there was something in you that knew that you needed fresh energy, fresh people. Mm-hmm. You needed a shift. And like your environment is so powerful, because you pick up, we all, whether we are cognizant of it or not, we are picking up everyone else's energy, their emotion, what they're holding in their body, their emotion, their connection to, I think, higher consciousness. You know, I think that the mind is also something that's like a space that we all have access to.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I believe. And, you know, which is why I think that clearing your energy, having a practice to clear and center your energy, is so powerful. You know, yoga, qigong, dance, moving, meditation, breath work, even running or swimming, something that helps you to move your body, clear dense energy, and then come back to your own frequency, your own energy, is so powerful. And I mean, for me, it's been a game changer, because I think I'm actually very sensitive.
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple things. Well, first, like the first time I went to LA or California, I felt it, like it feels different.
100%. Same.
And I was just like, wow, like I like this. This feels good, you know? But also, you know, a couple times you've talked about like this physicality thing. And for me, I love baseball. I loved it as a little kid. I played it obsessively. I practiced, like I was so into it. And if I've done anything for 10,000 hours in my life, it's fielding ground balls. Like I've, you know, so one time I was like, out on the cul-de-sac with my son and neighbors, and we had gloves and balls and baseball bats, and I was playing catch with another dad, and it just hit me like, I feel right with a glove in my hand and a ball in the other. I just do. Or the bat too. I mean, I just feel like I'm really in my body and grounded. And, you know, and this is years after not even like swinging a bat or anything. I just realized in my adulthood. And then, you know, I realized like, I need that. I need to find a way to get that. And yoga has satisfied that in some ways. I've begun to it. And, you know, part of it is just, at the very beginning of, you know, me, you know, the first classes I took were like a hot 26 thing where, you know, sort of the same poses and
like as Bikram.
Yeah. And it wasn't a Bikram studio, but So, you know, but the routine and I started to feel strong in ways I didn't ever before, like grounded, rooted, you know, and I think some of it is because the muscles that we begin to use in the balancing poses, and but it felt good, you know. I just felt strong in a way that I never had before and connected to myself. So, yeah, now that, and going back to trauma, I mean, and I'm no expert or anything like that, but I end up working with a lot of clients who have experienced it. I've experienced my own form of it and, you know, throughout my life, but, so I would kind of consider myself, trauma informed. Mm-hmm. But we're learning more and more, like working that energy out of our bodies is really, really important, and that we carry this stuff around in our bodies. So yeah, yoga thing.
It's a two-way, you know, we're having a two-way conversation. Like the body speaks to the mind and awareness, and then the mind speaks back to the body. So when there's a shift in the body, the mind and the psyche can like let go of certain things.
Yeah.
You know, as you let go, as you, you know, when you cry, when you really cry, you feel a release after, right?
Right.
So one of the most profound things that happened to me, I wasn't doing any kind of trauma focused work. I was in a very powerful teacher's class, in New York City. I was actually in a class with Rodney Yee, who was one of my main teachers when I was there. I did a 300-hour training with him, and I was just sitting in a seated posture. It's a hip opener, and you know, my knees are out, and sitting up on a blanket, just breathing, just following his instruction, just to be in my body, you know, breathing. And again, nothing in particular. I wasn't really forcing anything, but my knee, out of nowhere, just dropped like a couple inches. Just something just let go in my hip. And I also had a hip injury, like a physical injury, which was a snowboarding accident. But my knee dropped like 2 inches. My hip opened and tears started streaming down my face. Just immediately started crying. But there wasn't any like memory attached to it. You know, it was just pure, seemingly like a physical release. Like my point is, like, even though I was crying, I did feel some emotion, there was nothing tied to it. No story tied to it. So it was so fascinating to me. And I felt so good. Like that release felt so good in my hip. And I've also had experiences where I've been with powerful healers, somatic healers. And literally within a few minutes of being in their presence and them just like barely touching me, sometimes not even touching me, I just start crying. They see where I'm holding tension and pain, and they just help me unblock it. And it's just like the floodgates, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I've had it happen too.
So I've just been really curious about the intersection of like psychology and really somatic psychotherapy, somatic healing, and that, like the intersection of like physical healing with like trauma and how that affects the psyche and how you can use that for really healing wounds and then moving forward and then like creating the life you want and stepping more into a higher version of yourself. So yeah.
This is great. I love doing this. I really do. You know, I had an experience like that with Reiki the first time I experienced it, where I was laying on my stomach and, you know, I knew she wasn't touching me, but I could feel her. And there was a, like, below my knee on my calf on one side. She just kind of stopped and started working around it. And the next thing you know, I'm crying uncontrollably. And I, you know, there was no pain in there. There was no, like you said, no association with any event or feeling or anything like that. It just needed to be released. And she was really sweet about it. She's like, "Do you want a hug?" And like held me. And it was a really nice experience. But it opened my eyes to the fact that, man, our bodies are such amazing things and so powerful. And the limits of our knowledge, you know, we just know so little, honestly. We have so much to learn. But so let me ask you, so you've obviously been through a lot. You've learned a lot. If there was a time in your life when you needed some support or words of wisdom, or when would that have been, and what would you go back and say to her?
Well, there's been a couple of times. Yeah, you know, there's been a couple times that I can think where I was feeling stuck and unhappy. And yeah, I think one of those times, there's been a couple, but one of those times I, probably not the most traumatic time, but it was a time where I seemingly was like doing okay, actually, in a lot of ways. Like I had this marketing gig, marketing director position. I was in a relationship, and living with a partner, and, you know, had some good friends around me, but ultimately I knew that I wasn't following my purpose, and I knew, and I was relatively unhappy. And I kind of felt a little bit stuck because I was like, well, you created this situation, you know, here you are. And, what I did and what I would recommend to anyone listening is I just took one step towards what my heart was really calling me to do. And that was, I did a yoga training. And then actually I was really called to leave the States. So I left the States for 6 months. I went to Southeast Asia, went to Bali and did a yoga retreat and stayed at this like healing center for a little bit of time. And the space that that gave me, you know, taking that step to do my first 200 hour training, which really was just like the first step. And then I ended up, you know, doing 3 or 4 more trainings. But my advice would just be to take the first step towards either what your heart is calling you to do, or what you could say your belly or your intuition, like what your soul just, or, you know, even if you're thinking about it more mentally. So some people are more like in your mind is like, what do you, like, if you could do anything else, if you feel yourself stuck, if you could do one thing that you're really excited about, you're really interested in, it's like, just keep doing that until it leads to the next place. You know, do that until it takes you to the next step. And then the next step will reveal itself, but just take like that first step. And the first step might be calling someone and just being like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like I'm lost. Like I need help. Well, and that might be the first step.
And you know, and I work with a lot of guys who are like at that place in life where they don't know what they want and they kind of need to figure out what they want and, you know, direction. Where am I going to go? And one of the things I always tell them is, you know, if you just follow an interest, you're going to find the people. You're going to find the right people. And if, and if you find the right people, you'll figure it out. You will. You'll be led to the right place and, you know, find where you belong. And people, I don't know. I just think in my regular career, you know, in the addiction treatment industry, I mean, who you're connected to is, I mean, to me, super important. You know, I was trained by people with like real high ethical standards, and, you know, that was passed down to me, and I've carried that throughout my career, and only like been really careful. I've made a couple mistakes about who I chose to let in, but for the most part, I've been able to stay with just quality people. And that has served me so well. The people really, really matter. And, you know, one of the things about this podcast that I've been enjoying and just kind of, feeling lately a lot is, you know, I'm a little over a year into it, and my life has just gotten, it feels like so much bigger, because there are all these people in my world now who I didn't even know before. This is like a built-in excuse to talk to like really cool people. And and like, this is such a perfect example of that. And I mean, I could just keep talking to you like this because we're like there, you know, I feel like. But I feel like if this episode is any longer, nobody will ever listen to it. So we probably ought to stop. So
thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
I really enjoyed our conversation.
Me too.
And I can't wait to drop into more of these.
Yeah. All right, there you go, Diana Pascal. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please leave a rating or a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you choose to listen to podcasts. You can email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. If you'd like to call and leave us a voicemail, some feedback, maybe even have whatever you say in that voicemail on the show, you can dial 561-247-4757. Leaving a message there is implying your consent to have that audio used on the show. Got a lot of great stuff coming up. You can follow us on Instagram or like our Facebook page, both at The Path to Authenticity. If you want to support the show, you can gain access to supplemental content, early access to episodes, by supporting the podcast on Patreon. That's patreon.com/The Path to Authenticity. So, there you have it. Like I said, got plenty of good stuff coming up. This is episode number 80, and excited about what comes next. Close to finishing this website, and lots of exciting stuff happening. I think I have a new sponsor for the show, which is going to help out a lot. But, you know, I'm here in West Palm Beach. It is Saturday, August 1st. This episode comes out on Tuesday, August 4th. And Hurricane Isaiah is barreling down on us. I had to clear out off my patio last night, bring everything inside. And, you know, it feels like the day before a hurricane comes. I mean, it's kind of this ominous sort of vibe that if you've been through this, you know what I'm talking about. So hopefully we'll have another episode if I don't blow away. But I wanted to get this one done while I knew I still had power. So take care. Be good to yourselves. Wear a mask. Be nice.
You did great, honeybee.
The Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.